Pensacola's first choice for morning news, traffic, sports, and talk. The Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay. News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. Good morning, Pensacola.
First, I thought, oh, what's the harm in a food truck or an ice cream truck out on the beach? But then you think about it, you know, you see the one application for a Saturday, every second Saturday of every month, using up the parking lot. We've heard it from our folks out there that the parking out on the beach is at a premium. There are commercial properties out there. There's a donut truck parked in front of one of the real estate. They got an internet vendor license. They put that out there. As I come across the bridge, you know, back into Navarre, we've got pickets who set up a food truck alley, you know, for food trucks to come in and highlight. You got St. Michael's Brewery who's bringing in food trucks. We've got a landscape developer down there who's actually building a food truck court on Highway 98.
So this is the County Commission. This is Santa Rosa talking about Dave Peach, Chairman, District 4 of our area, talking about whether to allow food trucks out on the parking lot at the beach or in other public areas, right? Because, I mean, it's not just the one place. But the idea, this is one of these, like, recurrent philosophy viewpoint clashes. I remember when this was a big deal here in Pensacola under Mayor Hayward, and where would we have food trucks and where wouldn't we? And I think we've kind of reached a bit of a detente on this where they just are where they are and nobody much does anything to stop them. And remember the mayor was having them at the city hall for a while and they're still there periodically. And, you know, you see al fresco, it's not quite the same, but you see food truck rallies pop up all over the place. I think we've kind of somehow, I don't really know what the rules are right now. But, Davis, if you want to find a food truck, can you find a food truck?
Sure.
Oh, yeah. No problem.
I love food trucks.
But are they able to be found on a public land somewhere? Well, that was kind of the issue. And Sam Parker raising the question that, you know, look, it's good to have them, but...
And quite frankly, I haven't heard about this in a few years, and this conversation brought to mind about, you know, having a food truck designated area out there for the industrial park. You know, at first I thought, man, that'd be fantastic, you know, and provide that. And there's really very little competition. But then, you know, honestly, though, if I was the fellow that owned the Piggly Wiggly and doing that deli, I'd say, hey, I'm paying property taxes and this is an unfair advantage to do it on public property.
So this is always the question, right, is you have brick and mortar restaurants or bars or grocery stores that have a food service element to them. They pay property taxes. They have invested a lot of money in the physical infrastructure of their building, and they're paying for water and sewer and electricity. I mean, they're doing all the things to support the, you know, services they get, but also the governmental operations that provide those services. And then a food truck comes along and is like, woohoo, here I am, you know, and they don't pay that same kind of stuff. And so there is a tension historically between allowing food truck operators, particularly if you're going to allow them on public land, like, say, a public right-of-way or a parking lot, what do you do to make sure that things are fair and equitable, if that's even a concern, between them and the brick and mortars?
I think we've got to keep our business owners that have made substantial investments in the property and paying property tax. We've got to keep them first and foremost.
So do you, and is that true? Is that true? Do you have to keep them first and foremost? And here's where it's a little bit weird. Because on the one hand, Republicans historically believe in things like competition and don't believe in protectionism, right? I mean, it's a kind of protectionism because you're looking to protect businesses. And it's kind of funny when I was listening to the commissioners talk about this, they kept talking about protecting small businesses. And you know what I kept thinking is, well, food truck is a small business. And a lot of their way of thinking about it was, well, it's fine if you're a physical restaurant or a bar that wants to create a food truck to go somewhere else. And my thought is, it's supposed to work the other way around. The idea of a food truck is you start with an idea that you think is going to work. You invest a little bit because a food truck's going to run you, what, $50,000, $100,000, something like that, maybe. You in maybe it's a little bit more, but you know, in that vicinity, right? It's not a couple million anyway. So you're gonna invest in something like that and try it and see if it works. And if it takes off, you build a reputation and then you either get a permanent place or you expand or whatever. So it's entrepreneurial, very entrepreneurial. So 437-1620. What do you think? What's the right answer here? Do you think that because there's all kinds of options you could take? Should food trucks basically be allowed, as long as they're licensed, so as long as they pass the health inspection, should they be allowed to operate where they want to? Or should there be some kind of effort to protect brick-and-mortar establishments from competition of food trucks, especially, again, on public? Now, the commissioners were all clear that on private land, do what you want, because it's your private land. As long as you get, you know, a license, it's no problem. But even there, I think you could make the argument, right, that a restaurant sets up a place and a food truck is invading that place by coming into the parking lot next door to the company that says we want to have a food truck. 437-1620, 437-1620. I know, Davis, you have a view about this lover of food.
I'm, of course, lover of food, but I'm a huge lover of food trucks. One, because these food trucks often provide such a diverse amount of food and just sort of uniqueness that you may not find at other places. But also, you'll find food trucks, using downtown Pensacola as an example, at places that maybe serve alcohol, but they don't serve food. So having those food trucks brings in more people, makes people want to drink more because they're eating more, and that's business for both parties. So I think about Navarre Beach. There's only really one restaurant on Navarre Beach, right? I'm not seeing a food truck park in that parking lot, but maybe at that other parking lot that's just down the street where I'm at the beach all day. Eventually, I want to eat something. I may not want to go all the way to Juana's, but maybe that food truck that's right there, that's convenient. And also with you, I'm all about that business.
I love the idea of the entrepreneurialism of it. I love the variety that they bring. I'm with you that a lot of places partner with them. I mean, you know, I know a lot of the bars, especially breweries, they don't make food, but they love having a food truck, or they encourage Uber Eats or DoorDash or any of these other services, right? You know, to come and bring food in so that you can sit in your
stick around longer.
And weirdly, that is and is not a kind of competition. Can you do? You know, pardon my ignorance on this. We just don't order a lot of food out. Can you do Uber Eats with food trucks?
Can you do Uber Eats
with food trucks?
I haven't seen it, and I don't use that a whole lot. But I just haven't seen it. No,
but it does kind of make sense, right? Like, why would a food truck want to limit itself only to the right here?
Well, I do know that also there's like a certain percentage that Uber Eats would take from you.
Fair
so maybe they're
so
trying
the
to
cheapness
keep
of doing the food truck where the food isn't all that expensive. All right, fair enough. 437-1620, your thoughts? Is there, you know, what's the right way to think about this? I'll tell you my own general take is somebody who operates a food truck has looked at the entire scope of what exists right now, and they've found a kind of a sideways, asymmetrical way to make a market niche work. And I just don't think that you ought to fight back with government. I don't. I think that these disruptive kinds of technologies should be given generally as much breath to work as you can. As long as they're not doing, think about how taxi cab drivers always responded to Uber and Lyft. You know, they want to stop it. Why? Because they've invested all this technology because they say they're safer. Okay, fine. Let the customer decide. 437-1620, 437-1620.
Every day she takes a morning bath, she wets her hair, wraps a doll around her as she's heading for the bedroom chair. It's just another day.
619, News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. Good morning. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Mark Jacobs is in the newsroom with our headlines. Mark?
A North Carolina sheriff says he'll ask a judge today to release body cam video of a deadly shooting. The family of Andrew Brown Jr. had hoped to watch it today. The 42-year-old shot in the back last week as he reportedly tried to drive off during a search warrant on drug charges. Dr. Anthony Fauci says the recent pause in the Johnson & Johnson vaccinations shows the FDA and CDC's commitment to safety.
People will realize that we take safety very seriously. We're out there trying to combat the degree of vaccine hesitancy that still is out there.
On ABC's This Week, Fauci noted the agencies conducted the pause to review data and it didn't change the belief that the benefits far outweigh the risks.
Yeah, it's back in use now, even in Florida, in some places. I don't know that we have it quite yet here. I had seen in the vaccine numbers that the single dose had stalled, for of course, because it was on pause. But yeah, look, if this were the vaccine that were available, I would take that easily. In fact, I mean, you know, I didn't really go shopping for a vaccine, but I kind of prefer the Moderna of the three. But any of the three, the chance of adverse side effects is so low, even with the J&J. I mean, it's zero. It's practically zero. So anyway, and by the way, I've had no adverse reaction at all. I'm now 3 days post-vaccine? I mean, it's Thursday, Friday, Saturday, 4 days post-vaccine. I had a little bit of, I was feeling a little achy on Friday in the midday. That's it.
Good.
Nothing.
Good.
No adverse reaction whatsoever.
Well, then you can go ahead and start planning that vacation trip to Europe.
I'm ready.
Looks like borders could be reopening by summer. New York Times says it would only be for tourists who can prove they've been fully vaccinated.
I'm torn. I'm not a fan of the vaccine passports. I don't like mandatory anything in this regard. But at the same time, if that's what somebody requires of me, here's my cart.
Yep, I've got mine in my wallet.
There is a solution. I'm not going to let the fact that they're doing something I think is inappropriate in requiring it limit me from taking advantage of the fact that they're letting me take advantage of it.
Right.
So I'm with DeSantis, but if that's what I need to do to go on a cruise, well, hey, I've done it. You know, so fair enough. Mark Jacobs is in the newsroom. Thanks, Mark. 621 here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Yeah, it's kind of funny. It's ridiculous to say it out loud, but I was almost disappointed that I had no adverse reaction. Not because I wanted it. But I had, I think, built up in my head, like, oh, this is going to suck. That's what I had in my head. I was like, oh, man, this is going to be bad. You know, I wasn't scheduling guests for the wrap on Friday. I wasn't planning anything to do over the weekend, just in case, because I was expecting that it was, you know, I know so many people that have had this terrible reaction and been like a flu for 24 hours. I'm like, well, here it comes. And every day it didn't happen. I was like, well, I hope it's not tomorrow. And finally, I'm like, this is not happening. Awesome. Yes, I'll take it. 622 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Another friend of mine that got vaccinated with me second time at Brownsville, same thing. No reaction whatsoever. No problem whatsoever. I still don't have a theory. I used to have a theory that it was your good immune system, that you had bad reactions, and that people with weakened immune systems, you know, I that theory is clearly not right. You could make the case that you know, if you've had it before, that's when you had a bad reaction. But Grover had it, and he had a terrible reaction. So I have no theory. I don't know. I have no theory. It's just, it's like so much else related to this disease. It's just, you know, unpredictable. 623 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. What was I going to... Oh, Davis, you and I had talked about this. We talk about this periodically. The Pedros that is missed their inspections,
yeah,
on Highway 98, and you know that's a restaurant location that has had its history of not quite getting there. Right, has it been multiple? Because I'm not from the area. I don't know past 7 years. But
so when I was younger, I remember it being Barnhills.
Okay,
and then Barnhills went away. Then it became an Asian buffet-style restaurant, mm-hmm, which Barnhills was also a buffet-style. And then they completely renovated the inside, and then it was Horizons, which I loved. And then that went away because they opened up a new place, and then they completely started remodeling, rebuilding,
uh-huh,
and then we had Pedro's coming in.
So this is five for you, as I was counting off the top of my head right there.
I think I said four, but I think I'm missing another, okay, restaurant, so maybe five at some point.
So Twin Peaks is gone now. Twin, yeah, Peaks has been gone for a couple of weeks over there, you know, southeast corner, Cordova Mall, right on by you. That's been a couple of other things before, but I couldn't remember what it was previous to that, right? Do you remember what it was before that?
Wasn't it like a Texas Roadhouse?
That seems right to me.
Kind of,
yeah,
company, I think.
I remember when they came in and all the controversy around them, but okay, here's my thought. I don't understand why this is true, but I have seen this my whole life. There seem to be just cursed restaurant locations. There just seem to be places where... Now, they were there for, you know, a while. What, 5 years or something like that, I think. But, like, especially, you know, like, I don't really know the area well enough about where Pedro's is going into. But if you tell me there's been five restaurants there in the time that you've lived here, that's a cursed location. I'm not interested. And I don't mean like there's some supernatural forces. I just mean, haven't you ever seen a place where that seems like a great location for a restaurant? And it's this restaurant, and then it's not, and then another, and another. Just never, yeah. Even when, like you said, they have good food, it just doesn't, everywhere I've ever lived, you can point to that place, that place, that place. And I always wonder, who is the dummy that keeps buying this location? And, I mean, good luck. I hope it works for you. But the people who live here, I think, look at that place and think, here we go again.
Well, I've noticed, like, the Pedro's that's over off Davis Highway used to be, you know, Charlie's, and that closed down.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's considered a bad area when it comes to business, but
I don't know either, because I'm with you. That would seem like that's a huge traffic area there at Langley and Davis. You would think it's going to work great. And then when something doesn't, you kind of like, why not? And again, if it's multiple locations over time or multiple iterations over time, you really do wonder, why not? Okay. Okay. And kind of interesting because Kaylin is bringing on all of these strategists from the Republican Party. Because if I'm not mistaken, I thought I remember that Bruce Jenner was a fairly active conservative. So it's going to be interesting, you know, what's the appeal demographic and how much party lines get crossed. And, of course, Gavin Newsom is facing a recall. So I don't know, it's just going to be, and the way that works, I'm not a but the way I understand it is if they get this recall, which they will, and they pull him, then there's got to be replacements. And that's where the replacement slate comes in. It's kind of a simultaneous vote, I guess, is the way it works. Kind of a weird system, but, they like their recalls in California. So we'll see. It's an interesting development. Well, somebody like that could never... Oh, come on. Schwarzenegger. Come on. California, anything could happen. Who knows?
I'm Jennifer Kishinka with Your Money Now. If you're looking to start a small business, you'll want to focus on Utah and probably skip New Jersey. Wallet Hub says 6 of the top 10 best small cities to start a small business are in Utah. Wallet Hub evaluated 20 factors, including accessible financing, HR availability, workforce education levels, office space costs, labor costs, and more. Number one is St. George, Utah, followed by Cedar City, Utah, and Williston, North Dakota. 5 of the top 10 worst small cities are in New Jersey, including Westfield, Ridgewood, and Hoboken. Tampa Bay quarterback Tom Brady backing a new education technology company as part of a $12 million funding round. Class Technologies offers teaching and learning tools to K-12 schools and higher education institutions through Zoom. The tools enable instructors to present in front of a virtual classroom, take attendance, track participation, hand out assignments and quizzes, and proctor exams. On Wall Street, futures are mixed. That's Your Money Now.
Yo, VIP, let's kick it. Ice, ice, baby. Ice, ice, baby. All right, stop. Collaborate and listen.
This has nothing to do with anything, but this story will make you laugh, I think. Y'all know who Brent Lane is, my good friend Brent Lane, who hosts our sister station's morning show, Cat Pack, on 98.7 Cat Country. So this is like I've come to believe this is the only song he knows all the words to, because this is the song that he always karaoke's 100% of the time when we do karaoke, and it's hilarious. It is also my wife's favorite karaoke song. And she knows all the words to a lot of songs, but anyway, so Brent and my wife have this exactly in common, that they love them some Vanilla Ice. 638 News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Joining us now, we have Alex Andrade, our state representative for District 2, the southern half of Escambia County, plus Gulf Breeze and the beach. Alex, welcome back to the show, sir.
Hey, good morning, Andrew. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Final week of session, right? I mean, nothing's going to happen this week. It's boring. Yep. No overtime.
No, it's completely boring. I actually pulled off at a rest stop on my way back over to Tallahassee this morning to have this call. The news last week was that it was announced we'll be coming back for an extra special session in mid-May just to discuss the Seminole Compact that Governor DeSantis signed last week.
So can I be honest with you? I track a lot of things doing this job. Every time the gaming stuff comes up, my eyes glaze over and I try to remind myself why I'm supposed to care or follow, or just to the degree that you know that going in, explain to me why this matters and why I should care in Pensacola.
Well, Florida's had a pretty stringent ban and regulation on gambling. you know, in large part because of the type of tourism industry that we have. And I mean, there are metrics that show that instituting, you know, or expanding casinos and gambling tend to harm the residents of your specific state and send money out of state. But we've always had a compact with the Seminole tribe to regulate gambling and to operate gambling in Florida. That compact results in about $500 million a year coming to the state budget, or at least this new one could potentially do that. And one of the key components of that is a potential expansion of sports betting here in Florida. And a lot of analysts believe that Florida is uniquely situated to be kind of the nationwide leader in sports betting. So it's something that we'll be discussing. When we have a special session like we will on this one specific topic, that's the only topic we can discuss. So it'll be heavily debated and discussed going into our May 17th special session.
Well, it sounds, the way you describe it, it sounds like all upside. Is there, I mean, what's the concern?
Well, I mean, the concern is about fundamentally changing the character of Florida tourism, right? So depending on exactly what the compact says, I haven't read through it yet. You know, it could change it could add to the reasons why people might visit Florida, but it could also have a negative societal effect, you know, if we expand gambling here in different ways. But, I mean, the big net effect financially, obviously, is $500 million additional dollars in state revenue every year. And the contract also provides for increases in that payment from the Seminole tribe above $500 million if these new kind of, you know, these new markets do expand and are successful for the tribe.
How does it work? I mean, if you guys make changes to it, does that then go back to them for negotiation? I mean, is this an active negotiation between the legislature and them? How does it work practically?
From my understanding, I mean, we could reject it with specific instructions.
Okay.
Or we can ratify what the governor negotiated and signed.
Okay, so this is not you. This is not you amending. This is not you hammering out legislation. This is up or down with notes.
Yeah, that's my general understanding.
I've
obviously never signed off on a compact. These occur, you know, once every 20 to 30 years. So. Obviously I'm 31 years old. I don't believe one's been signed more than, you know, once in my lifetime previously. So this will be a fun experience for me to learn through.
The, obviously you and I talk quite a bit about the bridge because the bridge runs between your district, Gulf Breeze and, Pensacola, and of course affects your other part of your district in the Pensacola Beach. Are you still on board? Do you still think they're going to hit the date? And more to the point, what is being done? I know you wrote this letter requesting an audit to the governor's office. You've been very involved in these calls and all of that, I understand. But what's being done? I think people want to know what's being done to Skanska or with Skanska at this point.
Well, Skanska is still having their liquidated damages provisions being levied against them every day, north of $30,000 every day the four lanes aren't open on that first span. Right now I'm working, I had a call last week with Commissioner Bender, DOT and the Department of Economic Opportunity working on trying to reduce or completely subsidize the cost of the ferry system that's coming online with Hornblower coming back into town.
Pause there for a second, Alex. I saw you post that on Instagram last week. I didn't know what you meant and I failed to ask you about it last week. When you say subsidize the ferry, you just mean the route that's going to run from Pensacola Beach, the sound side, over to the Pensacola terminal. You're not talking about something additional like making a stop at Vista Park and Gulf Breeze or anything like that, right?
No, nothing additional.
Okay.
You know, that decision was made months ago. But if we can use that as the type of commuter ferry, we will. So I'm working to make sure that we've turned over every single rock to try and get that done. Got an update from DOT last week. They're feeling extremely confident that by mid-May, they can almost have traffic on there. You know, they haven't revised their estimate because they're being very conservative, but they're very confident that because all the trophy pieces are in, all the spans are in, they're just laying deck at this point, but they're going to meet their deadline at the very least and potentially have two lanes open before that estimated deadline. So it's very comforting to hear that those trophy pieces and spans are all in. And that the four lane could even come back sooner than originally estimated. So
dwell on that for a second. I mean, don't just throw that out there and then move past it. You're telling me that, and I look, you know me, I will believe it when 1,000 of us have driven across it. Okay. But you're telling me that that where we are with the trophies, the main hardware is all in, that decking, which is the quickest thing, the easiest thing to do, that's just the concrete surface on the top. That's what's left to be done. And they are saying, without revising their official estimate, they're saying, yes, definitely Memorial Day, possibly earlier.
Yeah. I was on a call last week with Commissioner Bender, and the engineers at DOT are very, very confident at this point. Again, always with the caveat, if you don't believe me, I don't blame you. But all the indicators are there to say that we'll have this bridge open at the very least by the end of May.
All right. Well, obviously, as you know, we're hoping for that. We're talking to Alex Andrade. He is our state representative for District 2. Alex, hang on for.
So I think it might get a little bit over dramatized by the folks that might have brought it to y'all. But yeah, essentially, if you're using state funding, over 50% of state funding in a project in Tampa, you cannot require a headquarters of a company to be in Tampa. You can't require specific training of folks in Tampa because these are state funds. So, you know, while covenants with the community are incredible, especially if, you know, one county wants to have that preference from the tax dollars that county levies, when we're talking about statewide funded projects, you know, the metric becomes different. You can't take state funding and then suddenly, you know, play kind of a, you know, home field advantage and act like it's your money as a county to mess with. So there's a balance there to be struck. And while I support covenants with the community, I believe that, you know, Florida-specific contracting with state dollars is something we can absolutely pursue. You know, it's good for a community like ours, who gets far less of that margin of money, to think in those terms, because we have big contractors too that can go bid on projects around the state, and they get harmed if a community like Miami-Dade or Tampa or Orlando is giving preferential treatment to companies in Tampa, Miami, and Orlando.
Okay, so this would only be with contracts that involve more than 50% of state money, and it would also allow us to prefer Florida businesses. It just wouldn't allow us to prefer, you know, Escambia or Santa Rosa businesses or something like that. Okay, I get it. We'll talk about this some more. And then the last thing I wanted to ask you about, I know you're not a state senator, and I know the House is apparently not on board with this, but the Senate unanimously voted to extend the duration of unemployment benefits and also the amount of unemployment benefits at a time where every business owner I know cannot find employees and says they have people showing up to check the box to say they filled out an application so they can keep their unemployment going. What is wrong with the Senate? Why is it? Help me understand.
Well, it's not actually what's wrong with the Senate. It's what's wrong with the argument. We have Democrats right now, you know, tearfully, you know, crying crocodile tears, saying that we haven't done enough to support individuals in Florida during our initial response to COVID-19. My argument is that we've done better than almost any other state in reopening and allowing people to go back to work and seek gainful employment. We see this argument, it's kind of an end run around kind of a universal basic income, this kind of socialist kind of ideal of, you know, if we just give people enough government money, they'll be able to be happier. There are help wanted signs in every single storefront. My county, Escambia County, is desperately trying to hire people. They have a ton of unfilled positions, and yet somehow we're still talking about unemployment benefits when the unemployment rate in Florida is incredibly low compared to other states in the middle of COVID-19, and we've done a very good job of getting reopened. I actually was the only one to stand up and ask that question. I said, listen, to a Democrat member who is tearfully pleading for extra money for unemployment, I said, you represent an area of Orlando that's a service-based economy like mine is. Do you not see the help wanted signs in every single storefront? And I was vilified by Democrats for asking that simple question. It's a bizarre situation for us to be in. We all know that we have a ton of people right now not actually looking for work. And while I believe that everyone was entitled to unemployment benefits if they were laid off by their employer during our response to COVID-19, we've reopened as a state. And the frustrating part for me is that some people don't seem to realize that. So, no, I won't vilify the Senate for voting to expand it, but the House is not on board with that. We see in our specific districts help wanted signs everywhere. And we need to be just getting people back to work, giving people opportunities to support their families again, like we've always stood for.
Yeah, I don't understand. I mean, I thought the Republicans controlled the Senate still, but whatever. Okay, so fair enough. Alex Andrade, he is our state representative for District 2. Alex, I always appreciate the time, sir. Have a good last week in Tallahassee. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Andrew.
6:51 here on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. For a gallon of gas, $2.88. Florida's a dime better at $2.78. Bridgeport, California could be $5.25. New Braunfels, I don't know how to say this, Texas, $2.19. That is the cheapest in the land. $2.77 in Navarre East at the Walmart. $2.76 west at the Walmart. $2.91 if you go up 87 and buy it, because, you know, why not pay more for gas? $2.84 at the foot of the Garcon Point Bridge across the street at the Murphy. Going into Milton, you've got $2.81 at the Raceway, $2.71 at the Pea Ridge Walmart, and $2.78 at your first station in Pace. That's the Circle K. Coming over into Pensacola, you got 268 at the Raceway on North of Davis, 264 at the Murphy in front of the US 29 Walmart, and coming in from the southwest side, 279 at the Navy Murphy. 6:54, Mark Jacobs in the newsroom with our headlines. Mark?
Yeah, New Braunfels. It's right across from Old Braunfels.
Yeah, okay. Well done. New Braunfels, is that how you say it?
I believe so.
I'll take it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. President Biden will mark a new milestone this week, crossing 100 days in office. So far, 53% of people think he's doing a good job, according to an NBC News poll. A Fox poll, 54%. Doses of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine being distributed once again in Florida.
On Florida's first full day of Johnson & Johnson re-entering the vaccine marketplace, many took a pass.
We didn't want to take chances.
Or voice strong opposition for their loved ones.
It's concerning for me as a parent.
That's NBC's Sam Brock. The vaccination sites, the federal ones in Jacksonville, Orlando, Miami, and Tampa, began vaccinating again yesterday with J&J. More kids in New York City headed back to the classroom today. Roughly 51,000 students who were doing all remote and chose to return will show up today. However, roughly two-thirds of the city's million students are still learning from home full-time.
God. Unbelievable. Wow. And people are, and the Johnson Johnson, we've talked about this before, one in a million, and what, one person died? Stop it. that promo that you had on there from Ryan, I'm like, yes, brother, that's exactly right. Oh, my goodness. Again, I would take it. I have taken the Moderna second shot, no consequence. I mean, a mild bit of, I didn't feel great on Friday, but a little, like a teeny, like a half on a 10-point scale. And I don't even know for sure that it was connected to that. It just was nothing. So any vaccine is better than no vaccine, especially the three that are approved, for sure. Davis Allen, time for a quick shot of sports.
Okay, so Madison Bumgarner threw a complete game and never gave up any hits. However, It was only a 7-inning game.
Right field, Rojas is there, Madison Bumgarner, a complete game shutout, no hits for the Braves in
so,
seven.
No,
it is not considered a no-hitter, and I think rightly so. It's
correct.
It's 7 innings, a baseball game, by the
double
way,
headers,
nine
right?
innings. It's a doubleheader. The new rule, which is being exercised this year in Major League Baseball, is a doubleheader, 7 innings, which I think players are actually appreciating. They get through the day faster. Mm-hmm. Fans are appreciating it, too. I'm a purist when it comes to baseball, although I do support the designated hitter. I don't like it, personally. But Madison Bumgarner didn't give up a single hit, and actually on the doubleheader, the Diamondbacks only gave up one hit in that doubleheader, so a good day, and still. Congratulations.
Yes, 7 innings is not a complete game.
Technically, going past 5 innings is a complete full game.
Yeah,
it's in the official record books.
Does not count
to
me.
Also, for our local football players, spring practice starts today, and I'm
Woo-hoo!
Sure many are looking forward to it. Some are possibly dreading it because that means it's time to work out again. That's your quick shot.
6:59. Future news, Davis, and I tell you the truth before it's true. All right. Well, Pensacola, the mask order has elapsed. Will we ever have a mask ordinance again in Pensacola?
We will not.
I'm going to say no, but we do need to get more people getting vaccinated. Food trucks on Navarre Beach, will they or won't they within the next year?
I think so,
on the
yes.
On the public area? I don't think so. The commissioners all seem to be against this. I would think they should, but I don't think that they actually will. And will Caitlyn Jenner be governor of California?
No.
Yep.